The headache scenario is definitely changing for the better. And I'm sure that a lot of young neurologists, once they get interested in headache, then we will see the direction changing, and it'll be satisfying. I give it another 10, 15 years from now. I think we should be somewhere there. A little more publication, a little more research from this region will make, we'll be making our presence felt on the global scene, but that is what is required.
When we're just barely keeping our head above water, it's easy to focus on our own immediate and urgent situation. But every now and then, it can be helpful to take a step back and take in a broader perspective. Our expert in this session has been trained in both the USA and England, but runs a headache clinic in Mumbai, India. India is home to 1.4 billion people and represents almost 18% of the world's population. It presents a whole new array of challenges and barriers for people with migraine. To discuss migraine management in the East is Dr. Ravi Shankar. Dr. Ravi Shankar, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You've trained in headache medicine in two continents, but your headache practice is in Mumbai, a very different environment from where you trained. There's 20 million people alone just there. How many headache specialists would you say there are in Mumbai to serve the population who have headache and or migraine disorders?
Right. For a population of 20 million, as you rightly said, and we have about a little more than 100 neurologists, but neurologists with a focus on headache would be just one, but those with an interest in headache may be between 5 and 10. So it's still not a big number. And we would always welcome more neurologists with an interest and focus in headache medicine to come to Bombay and settle down.
How is treatment in the East different from that in the West?
The number one way is the awareness of the population that you're treating. And then you come to the level of education and knowledge about headaches and the literacy level of the patients who come to your clinic. And they have been doing the rounds of so many specialists and so many other doctors who have been providing suboptimal treatment that they come with a lot of hope, they come with a lot of expectations, and you have to fulfill their expectations. And you have to be a doctor of a different kind. You have to be able to explain to them why their head pains, because nobody has told them before us as to why their head pains. Nobody has told them about the details about migraine, the duration for which they have to take the treatment, the extent to which they can hope to get relief. And then, of course, the availability of treatment options at your hand, given the fact that a lot of the newer treatments that are available in the West for chronic migraine, for refractory migraine, and for cluster headache are not all available to us in Mumbai. And we still do not have many of the parenteral options to treat an acute status migranosis, or if you need to use devices and neuromodulation for migraine, we still don't have the devices beyond just Cefaly, which is available now. And we don't have too many experts. We do have in our hospital somebody who can surgically deal with the refractory headache situations. But I think the main dilemma is the fact that patients have to pay from their pocket. Insurance and the healthcare system does not support headache medicine. Medicines are costly. All the medicines are not available to us. And you have to, in this background, you have to make sure that the patient follows up with you and you're able to establish the continuity of care, which is most important for primary headaches.
Sounds like there's a lot of differences to the West, and we'll touch on some of those challenges that you've called out just then. What is the prevalence of migraine in India? Is it similar to that you find in Europe and North America?
We don't have the perfect epidemiological population-based survey as yet from India, because India is a very diverse country. We do have a study from Bangalore, which has looked at the population-based prevalence of migraine. And it's pretty much similar to what figures have come from well-established surveys in the West. So we are looking at about 20 to 25% prevalence of migraine in the general population. But we have a couple of clinic-based studies which have looked at the type of patients we see in the clinic, the differences between what we see in the clinic here in India and the and those we see in the West. So there are certain differences which we can talk about, but definitely the popular prevalence is more or less the same, except for certain types of headaches. For example, the trigeminal autonomic cephalalgias. We see much less of them in our part of the world. We do not see much of chronic cluster headache, and we see less of migraine with aura. So there are some intricate variations in the subtypes of migraine that we see. But by and large, the prevalence, I would say, is more or less similar to what you see in the West.
What about for chronic migraine?
Chronic migraine, the clinic-based figures would also be similar to about 3 to 4% of patients who come with chronic migraine. And because of, as I mentioned to you, non-availability of the best treatment options, our percentages of chronic refractory migraine may be higher than what you see in the West.
And because of the lack of specific migraine treatments, do you see any differences in medication overuse or rebound headaches that might be arising?
Yes. In fact, that might be advantageous for us because the incidence of, we've got two good studies on medication overuse headache, both clinic-based, but and we found that the incidence of medication overuse headache, or MOH as I will call it, is much less than what you see in the West. The culprits in our region mainly are ergotamine and triptan drugs are too costly for many of our patients. So you don't see much of triptan overuse. And luckily for us, we do not have too many combination analgesics, and even the short-acting barbiturates as in the United States. So therefore, even over-the-counter prescriptions or self-medication over-the-counter does not get into the areas which would lead to a high incidence of medication overuse headache. So we are fortunate with that. But at the same time, I must say that medication overuse headache goes largely unrecognized by most primary care physicians, who are the first point of halt for many of the patients. So therefore, that is where we need to educate the at the undergraduate and postgraduate level for physicians to recognize and then be able to refer them to the right centers for care of medication overuse headache.
It sounds like a similar challenge that we still have in the West as well ourselves. You've published findings about unusual Indian migraine trigger factors. Can you share some of these?
Yes. And the reason I would like to talk about this is now, interestingly, I am looking at a situation where if you were to a hypothetical scenario, if you were to ask a headache specialist trained in the West to come and practice in India, where would be the traps? When it comes to secondary headaches, pretty much everything is similar. You do an imaging, you make the right diagnosis, you choose the right treatment, and both the physician or the neurologist trained in the West and the neurologist trained in the East are going to score equal marks. But given a primary headache like migraine, where the outcome is largely dependent on the way the migraine is addressed holistically, I would say that one has to be aware of the unusual triggering factors one would come across in a population being treated in the East, in India, for example. Now, what are these unusual triggers? We did a study and we found that almost 25% of the triggers were different from what were being described in the West. Now, what do these different triggers include? You start with the habit of skipping breakfast. Now, breakfast in the West is a regular taken for granted meal. But in the East, you would find a lot of Indian homes do not have breakfast as a regular habit of all the people in the family. So when you skip breakfast, you tend to trigger off more headaches. Then you have fasting for religious reasons, be it the Ramadan fasting of the Muslims or the habit of fasting for religious reasons amongst the Hindus. So you have a lot of ladies in whom migraine is a definitely higher percentage, prevalence percentage. You will find them fasting on as many as 2 days of the week, 3 days of the week. And that definitely sets off the, makes the ground for ready for a headache. And then the type of foodstuffs that we have in India. So there are a lot of fermented food items, spicy food items. And then when you come to the population, a lot of people live in urban areas. There's a huge amount of overcrowding given the total population load. And then you have pollution. And for almost 8 months of the year, if you see most parts of the India have high temperatures, which could range between 38 to 30, 40 degrees centigrade. And you find that along with the high heat levels, you also have high light levels. And when there is overcrowding, when there are too many festivals, which are noisy festivals, then you find that, for example, Diwali is a very one of the most famous Hindu festivals in India. And there's a lot of bursting of crackers around this time. And there are huge processions with drum beats. So when you have these type of festivals happening practically once in 2 months, then you find the noise levels are something which migrants cannot tolerate. And when you travel within India, by and large, things are changing now. We are having a lot of travel in air-conditioned trains and buses, but by and large, a large number of the population may not be able to afford air-conditioned travel conditions. And so the overcrowding in trains, the overcrowding in buses, particularly in the interior parts of India, what we call as the rural areas, where 75% of our population live. It's only 25% who live in the urban towns, but 75% of population are in the rural areas. You find that travel conditions, particularly in the hot, humid summers, humidity is a big factor, which is now being well described as an important trigger factor for headaches. So heat and humid levels, high light levels, all these can contribute to more triggering of migraines. And then, of course, I'm sure you're going to ask me about something that we have written about in encephalalgia, the hair wash headache. So I will talk about that separately. That's another interesting, peculiar Indian triggering factor.
There were descriptions that you shared there that made me want to travel to India, but at the same time, made me nervous because of all the migraine triggers. But you know, it sounds like there's a lovely culture of celebration with people, with festivals, with wonderful food. But at the same time, for someone who has frequent migraine, particularly if it's chronic, it can be a pressure cooker with the heat and the humidity, the crowds and all those things. So I could see both sides of that coin. But it sounds like there's a, you know, there's a really rich and vibrant culture there that is very unique and different to the rest of the world.
Absolutely.
I do want to ask you about this hair wash related triggers. Can you explain that a little bit further?
In the first few years when I started practice in Mumbai, I started noticing that a number of ladies with migraine headache, migraine which fulfilled the criteria of the International Headache Classification, they came and reported that only on the days that they wash their hair. Now, this might throw up a question that don't they wash their hair every day? But you have to understand that in India, ladies have long hair, which are densely plated, and they don't, because they don't have that much time, they do not wash their hair every day. It's a body bath which they have. So they started reporting that on the days when they wash their hair, they definitely have a headache, which fulfills all the criteria of migraine. So when I started seeing many of these patients having similar complaints, then I thought that it might be worthwhile doing a study of these patients to find out why these headaches are triggered off by hair wash. By then, when I read up the literature, there is a bath-related headache which has been described from Japan and Taiwan and Korea and other parts, but those were bath-related thunderclap acute headaches. What I was seeing was their routine, the same type of migraine headache, and some of these patients had only hair wash as a trigger. Some of these patients also had their migraine triggered off by other factors like going out in the sun or not eating on time or eating the wrong kind of food. So then I said, there's another group which has triggering of hair wash being one of the triggers. And we decided to analyze these patients. And we found that we had a collection of 93 patients who reported with this type of what I have termed as hair wash headache. And over a group of 6,000 patients who were seen in the outpatients, and we wrote them up in cephalalgia. And at the end of it, we put them through a questionnaire to study what was the temperature of the water, what was the frequency of their bath. And interestingly, the ladies would postpone having a hair wash for the simple reason that they didn't want to go through the agony of an unbearable headache. And then we found that we could treat them with the same acute drugs. And when we started them on prophylaxis, we were able to reduce the incidence of these headaches, meaning thereby that we were able to de-link the triggering factor for this type of headache. And the bottom line is that we still don't have a clear idea of what could be the reason why this happens in the East. We've not had these reports from the West, although after my article, I've had stray emails coming in from people from Spain, the lady from Houston, who also said that my history matches up with what you have described from India. So we've had stray reports, but we don't have a consolidated study to describe. The closest is Turkey, where they've talked about this type of routine migraine type of headache linked to hair wash. And we still don't know whether it's a genetic difference, some ethnic difference, some thermosensitive receptors. But then again, if you want to draw an analogy, you have to remember that hot water epilepsy has also been described from India. So it has been described and well studied in Bangalore. There's been a lot of animal models created for hot water epilepsy. And if we go back into the overlap between migraine and epilepsy, we don't know which way to carry forward this type of research to understand why these differences do exist between. And it's the wet hair which definitely provokes, because the habit of using hair dryers is not very common in India. So now it is amongst the modern women, it's becoming more common to use a hair dryer. But otherwise, ladies in the interior parts of India, the rural parts, do allow their hair to be wet for much longer periods, whether that makes the hair strands much heavier and puts a stretch on some sort of thermosensitive receptors. We don't have an understanding as yet of why this happens, but this is a clear observation which we have made, and it has been reported with video recordings.
I'm glad that you've done the research here. I think it's a fascinating topic. And it is something that I've heard quite a bit of, actually, from our community, in which is mostly in the West, in the Western side. But it seems to be, or at least what a lot of people hypothesize, is it's due to the weight. But it could potentially be, you know, I wouldn't rule out, like, if you've got a strong scent in a shampoo or a conditioner. I think the temperature that you mentioned was a really interesting one as well. One of the things that I'm curious to kind of ask this community of people that have this trigger is, if you go to the hairdresser and they take the weight off your hair because you're lying back into a sink, and I wonder if that alleviates the pain of, because you don't have that weight and you've got someone massaging and it's a relaxing experience. Maybe that's a lovely excuse to ask the partner to give more hairdressing gift vouchers. But I think it's a fascinating subject and certainly deserves more attention and research. One of the other things that you mentioned was the heat and humidity. India is not far north of the equator. So if people are wondering, when you said sort of 40 degrees Celsius, that's around 100 Fahrenheit for those that sort of trying to do the calculation. So it gets hot and gets well above that. For people who are living in India, what type of expert would they often seek first to help with their migraine?
I think this happens all across the globe. I think the first port of halt is the ophthalmologist. In India, there is a notion amongst most people, lay people, that there is an error of refraction in the eye, which leads to the headache. So they would always check with the ophthalmologist. And if the ophthalmologist draws a blank and he says it is not due to any problem in your eye, the next port of halt would be for them an ENT specialist, because they think that it is a sinusitis related headache, which causes the recurrent headaches. So there again, some of them, if they are unlucky, then they have their sinuses punctured, nasal endoscopy is done. But by and large, and since most people, doctors in the rural areas still stick to the plain x-rays of the skull and sinuses, which do show some haziness in most x-rays. So they do not do the CT scan of the paranasal sinuses. And so therefore, patients think that it's their sinus which is causing the problem. And if the sinus doctor draws a blank, then if the ENT doctor draws a blank, then it's the spouse who first thinks that it's the stress which the patient is carrying. And so they go to the psychiatrist thinking that it's my tension which is giving me the headache. There is also a notion that it could be the stomach. So it could be their acidity, or it could be the constipation which is giving rise to the headache. So if somebody is unlucky, then he also has his endoscopy done. And then finally, they land up with the neurologist. So when we did the study, we found that less than 10% of patients out of the 1,000 patients whom we saw the route which they had taken before they had come to our clinic, we found that less than 10% had decided on their own to consult a neurologist. If it is referred by the family physician or the GP, then that was not included in the study. But on their own, less than 10% thought that migraine was a brain disorder for which they desired they needed to see a neurologist for optimal management. So that's the route which patients generally take. And if they have a lot of neck pain, either as prodrome or as part of the attack, then you also have an orthopedic surgeon. If the attacks are linked to menstrual period, then they think it's the premenstrual tension. And instead of getting treated for menstrual migraine, they are treated by the gynecologist. And so therefore, there is a lot of people seeing the wrong specialist for their migraines. Primary care physician is the first, should be, I feel, a well-trained primary care physician, I feel, should be the first port of halt for those with migraine. And he should be the one who decides when to refer to the neurologist if he is unable to treat the migraine adequately.
Yeah, wow. Ophthalmology, ENT, psychiatry. I have to admit, I've been to all of those myself, but that was after I wasn't sort of getting results from a neurologist that I thought would be able to help and was trying everything. But it sounds like it'd be a small miracle every time someone finds a neurologist and gets an accurate diagnosis, just because of all the barriers in place at the moment. Speaking about Asia in general, is India much different to the rest of Asia regarding the prevalence and patterns of migraine and headache?
There are some countries in Asia which are pretty advanced in headache management, headache knowledge. For example, Japan would be different, Taiwan would be different. And these are some of the advanced Asian countries. Singapore would be different. So these are places which are comparable to the Western world. Now, we don't really know too much about what happens in China, apart from the fact that acupuncture and herbs are quite often used there because we don't come across too much of their literature. But the rest of the Asian countries, if you take India, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Indonesia, and these countries would be more or less similar in terms of prevalence, in terms of the way headaches are managed, and the availability of modern drugs. So there are countries, Asia, you can divide it into two levels. One is the developed countries where you get pretty much most of the optimal treatment, and you do have more headache centers also. There are more headache-interested individuals in these countries. And in the other countries, headache medicine is still not recognized as a subspecialty. And most of the neurologists also are not interested in headache. The number of neurologists is pretty good in many of these countries. It is not that they do not have neurologists. But when you compare it with other subspecialties like epilepsy, movement disorders, stroke, you find that the interest in headache is much less. Probably those disorders are more visible, and those disorders are more specifically treatable. But in headaches also, you have areas like the trigeminal autonomic cephalalgias, which are specifically treatable and where treatment can make all the difference to the patient's future career. So therefore, my lament is for more neurologists to get interested in headache medicine and reduce the burden of headache across the Asian region.
Do you think that stigma is playing a role even within the medical professions when early career doctors are deciding where to specialize?
It is a changing scenario, definitely in the last 10, 20 years, particularly since globally also there have been so many advances in the headache field in the last 10 years, you would have seen a sea change. So given that type of impact and the International Headache Society, the American Headache Society, and the European Headache Federation, these are all doing such a good job in education. So we have a number of Western headache specialists who visit India periodically at our invitation, accept our invitation, and they're kind enough to visit. And when they do the lectures, it raises the level of education, the level of awareness, and the attitude towards headache patients is gradually changing. So definitely I feel the scenario is changing, and it might take another 10, 15 years, but you will see more headache specialists in these parts. And probably the treatability of primary headache disorders is still not, has not sunk in to perfection. And that is why you don't find many young neurologists taking up headaches, whereas the treatability of a movement disorder or stroke, where you intervene aggressively to change the scenario, that has definitely got more of an impact. So it is understandable, but we will definitely get more people interested in headache. So it's not too far away.
So we mentioned before about all the different experts that people are likely to see before they get to the neurologist. In some sense, that's a barrier to care. Looking at sort of patient-related barriers to care in India specifically, what are some that you see apart from this sort of circular journey to these other headache specialists? I know that you've written about this topic as well.
Yeah, the barriers to care, one is patients not seeing the right specialist, patients having a tendency to self-medicate, patients not being able to afford seeing a consultant physician or a consultant neurologist. And when they do see, then patients not willing to or not being able to afford continuity of care through follow-up. And if you take medicines like triptans and gepants, of course, are not available, then affordability again comes in as a factor where people are unable to buy these costly medicines. And the fact that the public healthcare system of the nation does not support headache medicine, either in the hospitals or the insurance, they do not recognize migraine as a biological problem worth supporting. So patients have to cough up all the money from their pocket when they have other priorities, maybe other health priorities, education of their children, so many other priorities to attend to, then paying heavily for a consultation does not come in the picture. And so therefore, they are suboptimally treated. And the availability and too many alternative options are more easily available. For example, there is a fear of allopathic medicines. There is a notion that allopathic medicines might have, the English medicines as the patients call it, have more side effects if taken for a long time, which is what prophylaxis is all about. So they opt for what they perceive as less harmful, the Ayurvedic system, which is prevalent in India, or homeopathy, which is again prevalent. And if they are in the interior villages, then there are cruder methods of branding and massage and other ways in which people get treated. So these are the many reasons why you don't find, you find only a small percentage of the population getting what would be termed optimal treatment in the hands of the right specialist.
It sounds like an incredibly challenging environment. And you could imagine a country like India with the population it has, the health priorities, you know, particularly around COVID and malaria, tuberculosis, HIV, migraine is probably, you know, not saying it's not important, but in terms of these, in the context of these other conditions, it's hard from a government perspective. I can see why, you know, talking to government and lobbying for change could be very, very challenging.
Yes, it is difficult because when you see a migraine patient who has just recovered even from a status migranosis, there is nothing on examination, there is nothing on imaging. So where is the proof that he has been through that type of disability and misery and suffering? So it's also abstract, it's also invisible, it's not measurable in any way. And so therefore, the proof is not forthcoming. So therefore, it is difficult to influence or make support agencies aware of the disability of a disorder like migraine. So it is only through doctors who are going to get interested in portraying the misery and disability of migraine sufferers that you will be able to impact government agencies. And they also have their difficulties and dilemmas. So I don't think anybody is to blame because the disorder is such. But one definite way in which things can change is when you have biomarkers. When you are going to get biomarkers, which are going to also indicate the severity of your chronic refractory migraine or the intractability of the treatment that you have taken, then definitely I am sure there is going to be an objective way of putting it across to people that this is the percentage of mild migraine, moderate migraine, and severe migraine in your zone, and then make a plea to the insurance agencies that you have to now pay up for this patient's treatment because you can't think of the GPANTS or CGRP antagonists given this type of less than 5% of people are getting treated optimally for this huge population.
Yeah. And that biomarker is something that would provide objective evidence rather than sort of a patient history, which is subjective and variable, you know, differs from person to person. It would provide that objectiveness that would say in black and white, you know, this is what this patient is going through and they, you know, deserve access. But it's still something that we're seeking. We don't have that quite yet.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the challenges that you identified was that patients may often drop out of treatment for financial reasons, and they may be reluctant to pay for repeat visits and medicines that they might think of as trivial or which the doctor, being uneducated in the subject, might say is incurable. It's a chronic disease. How do you respond to that?
Yes, that is where education of the physicians is most important, in the way they convey migraine to the patient. Because if they use the word, it's only migraine, it is just migraine, there is no cure for it, it's your bad family history that is to blame for your misery. These are sentences which stigmatize the disorder and which are very depressing for the patient to hear. So the patient always comes to you wanting to hear something positive about his ailment, something to tell him that he has hope in the future, there is light at the end of the tunnel. So one is to teach young doctors at the undergraduate level and also at the postgraduate level how to educate your patients regarding migraine. What is migraine? In our clinic, we, both for the patient education and also on some of the teaching slides which we use, we have cartoons which we have drawn. And some of these cartoons are helpful in conveying to the patient the misery of migraine and the treatability of migraine. So that is one way. The second way is to have programs across the country, which are conducted in medical colleges, because all over the world, people have talked about it. There is less than 1 or 2 hours of good teaching on headache medicine in the undergraduate curriculum. And in the postgraduate curriculum, you will find that there is not so much of teaching about, even after the last 10 years when migraine scenario has changed so considerably for the good, people are still not taking an interest in headache medicine. So therefore, that is the second way of impacting on how this scenario can be changed. The third is to have more headache centers across the country. And we are not talking of academic headache centers comparable to some of the best centers in the West. That is not required in all the places. We are talking of good service centers where the physician in charge is knowledgeable and well-trained with an interest in headache medicine and has the right attitude to treat patients. So if you have more headache centers across the country, and lastly, it is for the government and the pharma companies, the industry, to make available certain drugs which would make an impact and change, because given the fact that 10 to 20 to 30% of migraineurs can be chronic and refractory at times, even if you have a GPANT tablet, which is available at a reasonable cost, which some patients can buy, then you can definitely give hope to that patient. So all these things, and of course, non-pharmacological therapy is practically something which is not encouraged at most of the centers in the country. And so more emphasis on non-pharmacological treatment. We have yoga centers which are doing so well. And if we promote yoga as a non-pharmacological supportive treatment in addition to the drugs which the patient is taking, then you will find that a lot of patients can get good relief. So emphasis on non-pharmacological treatment, good treatment options, all these would go towards changing the situation which currently prevails.
You mentioned a couple of treatments there, the GPANTs. They're not currently available in India, are they?
No, we don't have the GPANTs in India as yet. And we have, for the last 1 year, we are having the CGRP antagonist Erenumab, which is available. So that's the only one which is available now. And we are finding a lot of patients are improving with the use of Erenumab, and the other monoclonal antibodies are not available as yet. And we are waiting for the day when the GPANTs will be available both acutely and for preventive treatment, which would cut costs significantly and help a lot of patients.
Yeah, that'll be a game changer. Like a lot of people are looking forward to that. The US has access at the moment, but not the rest of the world is waiting very eagerly. How do you as a clinician put together a treatment plan for a patient when such medications are not available, or they may be too costly, or you know, if there's no insurance support?
Naive migraineur, when he walks in with episodic migraine, it's not very difficult. We do have an advantage in that area too. We could start off with propranolol, but additionally, we have flunarizine, which is not available to the Western world in the US. It's available in Europe, but it's not available. Now, flunarizine, starting in small doses, is a drug which is very helpful in treating episodic migraine patients. We do have the anticonvulsants, all of them being available. So the next line, in addition to the first line, which we use, is available to us. Amitriptyline is available to us. So these drugs would take care of a huge chunk of the migraine patients whom we see. The dilemma starts when patients do not respond to adequately increased doses of the combination of these drugs. And acutely, we have most of the triptans available as tablets and as orally dissolving strips. What we do not have is the nasal spray of sumatriptan. We do not have the injection of sumatriptan. We do not have naratriptan or fluvatriptan for menstrual migraine. This is what we lack or what we are missing. But the other triptans are available, and eletriptan was available till recently. It has now gone out of the Indian market. So with the other triptans which are available, we can manage, for those who can afford, we can manage the acute treatment, and naproxen is, of course, available. Ergotamine is still in use for the cost reasons. The triptans are not something which every patient can afford. So ergotamine is still in use, and that's why we see a lot of medication overuse headache. So now, when we get into the inpatient management, we need dihydroergotamine very urgently for many of our patients. That is what we don't have, whether it is migraine, medication overuse headache, or whether it is a weaning off, and whether it is cluster headache. We would be very happy to have dihydroergotamine, but that's not available to us in the Indian market. And then, of course, as we discussed, the CGRP drugs are still not there except for ereinumab, which we have started using, but not too many can afford. It's still very pricey, and that's the dilemma which we face. So we would also be happy if we can have the devices, vagal nerve stimulators. They are not available to us. Cephaly is not so impactful when it comes to severe refractory migraine.
You made a public plea in one of your papers to colleagues saying that headache in India is as important as any other neurological problem, yet it's neglected. To deliver better care, promote research, headache must be given greater importance in the medical curriculum. You have echoed that in the interview here today. Has anyone in India answered your plea?
Well, I'm very happy to say that we've had a number of neurologists who are now interested in headache medicine. We have a very active headache subsection of the Indian Academy of Neurology, which is moving forward at a satisfying pace. We have many members, many neurologists becoming members of the International Headache Society. And the International Headache Society has been kind enough to make the membership free for people from our part of the world. And we also have a Headache Society of India. And when I came into the field, there were very few meetings where headache was given, where a headache topic was included in the agenda. So now you find that there are at least 2 to 3 hours devoted to headache in most of the national meetings. So the headache scenario is definitely changing for the better. And I'm sure that a lot of young neurologists, once they get interested in headache, then we will see the direction changing, and it'll be satisfying. I give it another 10, 15 years from now. I think we should be somewhere there. A little more publication, a little more research from this region will make we'll be making our presence felt on the global scene, but that is what is required.
Are there any patient organizations, nonprofits, or charities in India, in a national sense, for migraine or headache that you're aware of?
like in the West, we do not have any support groups which are actively for migraine and other primary headaches. So that is another suggestion which we can work on and establish a support group.
Well, I think if we have people from India watching that have an interest or a professional background that might be well suited, definitely let us know, and we can put you together with other like-minded people who are experiencing a similar thing in India. Dr. Ravi Shankar, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Migraine World Summit. Are there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave with the audience?
I'd like to say this much to the audience, that migraine today is a treatable disorder. There are many things in the pipeline which can definitely help reduce your misery. You have to first get recognized that it is migraine. You have to have the hope that it is treatable. You have to take the first step forward and control the triggers, see the right doctor who is interested in your welfare. And as they say, where there is a will, there is a way. I would just modify that and say that where there is a headache, there is a way today.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Carl. It has been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.